You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You needn't be a communist to care about your community.
Don't touch that, it's growing. Be careful, you guys.
Community Garden with Oscar Perez.
There's no weed.
Yes, in the final installment of the Community Garden this year, talked to Paris and Michael from Social Ritual about community, placemaking, and all things in general, our spaces, public spaces, all that jazz.
Here they are.
We always talk about how community is used as a buzzword a lot, and it's like community this, community that, what it actually is community. For me, I think about my own personal communities, and we're, as individuals in the city, we're involved in many different communities. There's no one community. It's a complete enmeshed...
Yeah, multifaceted.
People from different demographics, different cultures, different age groups have meeting places and groups that they connect over, and
I think a good word would be social cohesion as well. So it's about what glues people together, and so I think what would define a community is that cohesion between you and a place. And so coming from a placemaking perspective, I would like to think it was location specific as well. So communities tend to be, I guess, connected to a location, and that location can even be virtual nowadays.
Communities. It was interesting, we had a discussion at a workshop that I was lucky enough to go to that was kind of hosted by Milenko Matanovic, and we had this kind of debate between the people that were there as to whether community was this kind of like a group of similar people, or like people all that has similar interests, similar backgrounds, similar needs, like similar wants, or whether it was this thing, like whether it was a larger group of differences and diversity that all have like a single, perhaps uniting feature, like that kind of brings them together. But they're not, like, you don't have to be mates with everyone in your community. You're not, it's not necessarily a friend, like, selected interest group. Perhaps it is like a wider thing. And perhaps that's why it's kind of interesting to look at it kind of as a location thing.
Both are correct.
That's the thing. Like, there's no answer really. Like, and that's the thing, is like everything is relative. But
I think that what you're referring to could be interpreted as the glocality. So each glocality is unique in many ways, and yet each is also influenced by global trends and global consciousness. There's like a hybrid culture. And I feel like what you were saying before, like these similarities between people, I mean, at the end of the day, we are all people. So there are similarities in between all cultures at the core of it. And that's something Paris and I try to get into with our placemaking activations, with our organization, Social Ritual. So trying to find those things that do unite us. So like we run a program called Village of Flowers, and you know, you look across cultures, flowers are significant in many ways. So we're trying to get down to those unifying factors that will bring people together.
Because
the reality of our living situations are increasing in their diversity. So we are, as placemakers, we're really trying to respond to that, to bring people together in physical, in the public space, face-to-face, and communicating.
It's an interesting thing as well. Like, I used to talk to fashion-y people about, like, you dress this way. And so my response kind of seemed to always be, well, I think everyone dresses kind of the same, and that's how they want, or like how they like choose to express themselves, in the same way that everyone has a different experience of the city. Mm-hmm. However, everyone experiences the city. Different people have different experiences of this, of space, but everyone still experiences and interacts with space in kind of like a similar way. So it's like, although these things may look divisive, or like we have difference in religions or difference in cultural practice, however, the fact that we also have cultural practice or religious practice to some extent, perhaps is, if we look at it that way, perhaps slightly more unifying than dividing. It's like, that's just like how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, but, it's approaching the core.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just to like reiterate, and I think I'm picking up what you're putting down, which is, you know, although you might be perceived as different. Like with the fashion example you gave, at the core of it, you're all expressing the want or the need to express yourself. And so when we pull back a layer away from the what is inherently visible, essentially people are just wanting to express what their identity is. And so really that's very unifying, especially once we can get past that surface level. So, and that's where placemaking really, you know, tries to deepen, is that when we do come together, what we've noticed is sometimes we run events, like we do like a watercolor painting and or a harakiki flax weaving or these events where people come together for a reason. But after about 10 minutes or 30 minutes of people being in a space together, everything kind of like all the barriers kind of come down, and we find that we don't really need to do much. People are interacting, they're talking, and the activation kind of just takes its own form. And so that's where placemaking tries to put its focus on, is that community-led aspect. And so what we're trying to do is advocate for the community to get, you know, whether it's the funding or the physical location, to get these places and give them back to these people to take control.
That's the thing. It's like, like communities build these things and run these things. I mean,
it's funny because we're diving pretty deep into like almost quite an academic space around this topic. But our recent work in Placemaking Week, we took the time to really analyze what we were doing and our processes. Mm. And also coming from an artistic background, you tend to like really overly design or overly curate an experience and think that people really do need a lot of instruction. What we found is that the most simple thing can be the most effective, and that people across all cultures, across all age groups, all demographics, we all just respond to the most simple thing, just some mats and beanbags on some grass with some music is enough.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's like, we often these
we've forgotten how to be human or something.
Often these like spaces, it's like, oh, welcome to our new public space. Mm. We've like completely over-designed it. So it's, you do this here, this there, this there.
Yeah.
This is the intention for the space. This is what you use the space for. Where perhaps, and then you go to like the park.
Yeah.
And then, which has no really inherent or implied usage behind it, aside from perhaps recreation. But then that's such a broad umbrella term anyway.
Yep.
And you see more people using spaces without an implied or told usage, because it's people will just make what they can out of the space.
Yeah. It's such
People aren't able to express themselves. One of our activations we did on Placemaking Week was we brought a whole lot of art supplies into the space. We didn't tell people what to do with it.
It was a bit guerrilla style.
We just had it there, no instructions. Mm. We had young children designing artworks and showing us, hey, look what I made. We had a little boy make a book, and he showed us how to make a book. And it was just like, we had all these different responses happening. And it was like, cool, I actually learned something from you.
Yeah.
From the community, you know?
Like when we are in diverse communities as well, like, well, my view is informed by my background and like my past. And so I use space in a certain way. And then, so if someone that has an either entirely different background or even a minutely different background to me, I learned so much from the way that they can use a space and how they can, what they do in space.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's actually quite a good segue to talk about our process.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, because
what is the process behind Social Ritual?
Yeah, so because we're so new to this practice, we are still figuring it out quite a bit, like learn as we go.
Yeah.
We are now designing our activations by actually spending a lot of time in the space, doing a site analysis from everything to the permanent fixtures in the space to like
the users of the space,
cleanliness, the users, everything, talking to people who are just in the space, going around having a conversation, talking to community groups, talking to the commercial operations in the space, and actually finding a middle ground where we can successfully meet everyone's needs.
Yeah.
Because you can't just kind of prioritize one group, because there's multiple communities using that space.
Totally.
So we go through this process of analyzing and on so many different levels, right? Mm.
So it's, yeah, so I guess the businessy word would be a multi-stakeholder approach.
Yeah.
But obviously the heart of that is the community, because I feel that in the past it hasn't been, or we lost some kind of community-led initiative. I feel like we're undergoing a democratizing shift with the reallocation of public space to the community.
Yeah.
And Paris and I, for some reason, we've been picked up by the council as community leaders, and we take that responsibility and look to really support what the community needs. And so what we need to do, and what we do is we try and get everyone's opinion on what that space should have. And for example, we did these planter boxes down in the Container Village on Queen's Wharf, and it was so easy, like, just to go up to the local businesses, and there's a Malaysian restaurant, and he wanted chilies planted in there. And the thing is if you listen to people and you just plant the chilies, they take ownership of the space.
Yeah.
And that's what I find so amazing, is when you include people, they take ownership, and essentially that really reduces costs for the council, because people start to love and care about their public space.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing. We attempted to run a project in my last year at high school, where essentially from a discussion that we had about school pride at leadership camp, there was kind of two views that kind of stemmed from that, i.e. myself and one, and the majority of other people in the other. And so they were kind of like, oh, we need more competitions, more house competitions, and we'll have more pride in our houses, more pride in our school, and we can all blah, blah, blah. Which is a very traditional way of looking at, and it has its place. I understand that. But as someone that kind of comes from more of a kind of non-competitive background in my interests, I kind of wanted to propose the idea of that perhaps instead of competing against each other to like become proud of stuff, perhaps we work together and build stuff. So we attempted to build a series of planter boxes, and then a series of murals as well. We didn't actually get around to the murals, but we did get these planter boxes. And it's this thing of like, when you create something or see yourself reflected in something, you kind of more inherently care for it.
Yes.
And it's the thing that these were going to a space because our school was about to be rebuilt.
Mm.
And so essentially by putting these into an area which was all prefabricated buildings that had come from three other schools before us, it was that thing of like, no one cared about those buildings because they weren't our school buildings. Build these things and make these things and plant them out with stuff that people need or people use. It's like, okay, so now we can sit on these seats, but not only will we sit on these seats, but maybe we'll even try and tend to them.
Mm.
And so like, in the first 6 weeks, there was litter, et cetera, in them. But then as I was talking to one of the teachers there like earlier this month, and she's saying that they've been replanted and people still use them. It's like, well, it's now it's the thing of like, okay, because people have taken ownership or like now see themselves in the school, perhaps it's like they're more likely to actually care for the spaces.
It's a really good point, actually. Yeah. And I mean, it brings back lots of things that I've looked into recently regarding the online and offline worlds, or the glocality, that combination of local and global. And I think if you don't see yourself reflected in the public spaces that you use, you are more likely to retreat from them, whether that's into online worlds or whatever it is. You're more likely to retreat from that public space or not have any respect for it. So it's definitely something we've observed, is when you involve people in place, great things happen, and it benefits everybody involved.
Certainly. What does Social Ritual have coming up at the moment?
Cool.
Oh, pass it over to me.
Our
major program is the Summer on Queen's Wharf, which is due to take place from January to March 2019. We have over 40 events within seven separate programs. So they vary between artistic, well-being and ecological. We have Sunrise Yoga, where we're collaborating with yoga wear brand We Are. They've got curated yoga instructors, and a few of the sessions will have silent disco headsets with ambient music, and it's really immersive. And you're literally right on the end of Queen's Wharf, surrounded by the water with the sun rising. It is just the best way to escape the city and just, yeah, relax on the end of the wharf. Similar to that, we have a morning rave called Sunrise Rave, where we're collaborating with Morning People.
Yeah.
They run a series...
At Whammy Bar.
Morning dance parties. Yeah.
So, are you using the same space for that?
No, we're doing that on the end of Queen's Wharf as well.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it'll be really cool. It's early start, but
6:30 a.m.
I've been to the ones in at Whammy. It's actually really good fun. It's like we're doing it in this, our study break. And my friend and I were like, this is like, I could go to an exam straight after this.
I
feel so much more onto it than I would if I just slept in, or like,
yeah.
It's just like you get up and you go and you're like, I'm awake now, I'm ready for the day.
Yes.
Will that be through headphones as well, or is it?
Yeah.
It's through headphones, and
we've got Audio Vault Events silent disco headsets.
Yeah.
So they're completely wireless and it will be super immersive. And the lineup has been curated by Jamie Newman, who runs Morning People.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. Amazing lineup. And we've got Drawing Club, which is a curated series of life drawing classes on the end of the wharf as well. So everyone sort of sits around in beanbags, and we have a model and a DJ playing. And I'm there running it myself, actually. So I direct the class and give lots of drawing tips. And that runs for about 2 hours. And what else are we doing, Michael? The list goes on. We've got Cloud Games.
We've got this really cool festival of play called Cloud Games.
Festival of Play,
that's it. Yeah, and so, I suppose this is a really quite an interesting one. We've got these this community group involved called Wild Streets. And so the event is just, I suppose, the final installation of a process. And that process is involving Wild Streets, who include their community, and invite, you know, members of the community to design games from scratch. And so they are designing a bunch of really cool games to be installed in the space. So there'll be spatial games, you know, where you move your body around and you can interact with things and objects and people. And one of them that we played was, what is it called? The Buzzy Bee game or something?
Yeah.
And so it's really cool. What I really loved about it is that there were you can play this at all ages. And you could play it with your, if you had children, you could play it with your kids, or if you're all adults, you could play it. And it was super fun. And creating a beehive and collecting honeypots. And it was super fun and funny. And it's just to encourage play and a playful demeanor, because we lose that as we get older. And it's good to be playful and have creativity and get those, get that energy flowing within you. And we invite everyone down to that. That's, you know, from all ages. Yeah.
Mm.
It's exciting to hear.
Yeah. And we've got a lot of art workshops as well. We're doing Harakiki flax weaving workshops, and we're doing botanical watercolor painting within our village of flowers that have been recently planted out by Anna Dadson for the Love of Bees.
Mm.
Good old Anna.
Oh, yeah. No.
Love Anna.
Yeah.
Gardening guru.
Yeah. And
saved my garden show project.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of our main focus from now until the end of March, with a few other things on the horizon. But mainly we'd love to see people down on Queen's Wharf and get to know people and hear from people what they want as well. Like, we really want to have more of those conversations about what people want for Auckland City.
Yeah,
you know, totally.
And that's the best time that we have, is when we bring everyone down there together and actually have those face-to-face conversations.
Yeah. And when people see like spaces being used, they can then like imagine other things being used.
Hmm.
Whereas when people are like, okay, here's our blank canvas, what should we do with it? And it's like, well, like you don't have anything to like work from, or like you haven't seen how the space is used. It's like, it's hard to determine like, okay, so currently there's a car park building there.
Yes.
What should we do with it?
And
it's like, that's a car park building. Surely it's for car parks. Whereas, but like, if you see these different things in it, like, you go, oh, cool, maybe I can do this, or maybe I can do that.
So and yeah, again, it's about getting people to imagine the city.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what we really need, is people to imagine without limits. Provide, like, come up with stories and narratives for the future that are like a positive, transformative example.
Yeah.
You know?
And to feel a part of it as well. I think it's so easy to be disenfranchised. Yeah. And what we're really looking to do is like what Paris said, is to get people to imagine and to know that actually they do have a part in all of this, and together we can actually make really cool stuff happen. And I would have never dreamed that we'd been able to curate 40 events over summer.
It's massive.
It's unbelievable. But we didn't do that alone. Like, with the collaboration between different community groups and obviously Panuku, the support from Panuku Development Auckland, who have totally backed us, which shows, which is just amazing that the council is taking these steps forward for advocating for the community. So without all of this happening, we wouldn't have been able to do it. So come and get involved. Tell us what you want to see in Auckland. Message us on our Facebook or Social Ritual, and let us know what you want to see. And we would love to get you involved. If you've got an idea, come and talk to us. Yeah.
I can't reach the potatoes.
Community Garden with Oscar Perez.
I'm going to name this one Cynthia.
Go forth and prosper.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.